In for the next 12 weeks, the book of Ecclesiastes. Anybody ever been involved in a study? If you have, raise your hand. In the book of Ecclesiastes, a couple of folks. I guess if you look at the book of Ecclesiastes, we all have our favorite books. The top 10 of mine, maybe Ecclesiastes would be considered top 5 of my books that I enjoy studying, the book of Samuel, the book of Kings, the book of Proverbs. Those are some very great books. The book of Ecclesiastes is a book of wisdom. It's a book of, and we'll get into this here in just a few minutes. It's a book that can be somewhat depressing. If you look at it from a physical standpoint, but the book of Ecclesiastes is a book of tremendous, tremendous wealth. If you're looking at it in the proper respects, okay? We're not going to get involved too much in the introduction or the authorship of the book of Ecclesiastes because most folks would readily agree that the author of Ecclesiastes is who? Solomon. Okay, so there's not much to do it. We have 12 weeks in this quarter. There's 12 chapters in the book of Ecclesiastes. So what we're going to do is we're going to try to cover a chapter a week. A week. And there will be times we'll hit high spots. Sometimes there's some things we won't touch because, you know, we just don't really have enough time to get in great depth as far as some things that are involved in the book of Ecclesiastes. So, as you know, I like a lot of discussion. If you like to make a comment, just let me know. Because we can go in many different directions in this book. There is in the book of Ecclesiastes a fair amount of repetition. You understand what I mean by that. Sometimes the thoughts and the themes of some things, for an example, in chapter 1, you look in chapter 3, some of the same thoughts are expressed in both chapters. And those are the things that we'll try to avoid for time's sake, okay? But again, we'll do the best we can to cover as much as we can. And if there's some things that I might miss that you perhaps would like to talk about, feel free to do so, okay? Because if we don't get discussion, then I'm going to have to start asking questions. And hopefully that will generate some discussion. The book of Ecclesiastes is a book that is needed for all ages. I wish the book of Ecclesiastes was available to be taught in our high schools as well as in our colleges today. There is a tremendous, and I said this before, and we're going to probably keep repeating this, there is a tremendous amount of wisdom in this book. If we take the wisdom the way God, the author of the book, intended us to take the wisdom that's found in it, okay? Now, the book of Ecclesiastes was written, some seem to think, to young people, all right? Now, when I say young people, what comes into your mind? What is young? Well, it is, okay? 60 can be young if you feel young, but typically, for the Hebrews, youth was up to age what? Anybody know? Typically? About 40. Okay, about 40. So those of you who are about 40 years old, you consider yourself still young. If you're over 40, then you're probably over the hill, like some of us. The world that we live in today, and the reason I say I wish that we could that the book could be taught in our high schools and in our colleges and in our middle schools is because today the world is full of me. Now, what do I mean by that? The world is full of me. Okay, it's all about me. You see mostly kids, and when I say kids, I think of teenagers, late teens, early 20s. They take the selfies, you know what I'm talking about? And that's about me, okay, in most respects. It deals with me. It's the idea of humanism, all right? What is humanism? Just the basic concept. What is humanism? That man in himself is what? Is God, okay? Man is God. And man is able to fix his own life, to chart his own path. And man, in essence, is God himself. That's the basic tenets of humanism. And if you have that mentality of the humanistic philosophy, then you understand that this in this life is all there is to this life. Right? You see what I'm saying? If I'm a humanist, then all that I'm looking for in my existence, because there is nothing else after my existence, is the things that are in this life. And I'm afraid sometimes that the idea has infiltrated the church and, you know, people that we perhaps know, because sometimes if we look at ourselves, sometimes things in this life tend to put more focus than things that ought to be focused on. People will focus on education. Now let me give you an example. How often do we make our children make sure they do their homework? And education's a great thing, and I'm not against education. Education is a wonderful thing, but how much pressure do we put on our children to make sure that they get good grades in school, but that same enthusiasm for education is not stressed in their biblical studies and their spiritual life? I mean, could we be honest with ourselves and say that a lot of times we do stress the physical more than we do sometimes the spiritual? Sports, you know, sometimes sports takes precedent over a lot of things. Folks will miss services for sports activities. Things that they enjoy, recreation, sometimes takes precedence. That's humanism. And if all I'm about in this life is that mentality, then we definitely need to study the book of Ecclesiastes, because the book of Ecclesiastes deals with the humanistic mentality that there is more to life than just this life, okay? All right. Solomon was a man that had more than we can imagine. If you probably took all of our income and wrapped it into one, we would probably be embarrassed compared to the wealth of Solomon. Somebody turn to the book of 1 Kings chapter 4, verse 29 through 34, and we're going to look at some things here in this particular chapter. Somebody also turn to 1 Kings chapter 10, verses 14 through 29. We're not going to read it all. But in these two particular books, 1 Kings chapter 4, God gave Solomon what? What was the thing that Solomon asked for when God asked him that he would give him? What was that he asked for? Wisdom, okay? In 1 Kings chapter 4, verses 29 through 34, somebody read that. Anybody? Okay, 1 Kings chapter 10, since God gave him wisdom, God also gave him great wealth, okay? And we're not going to read it. I'd like for you to do this. I don't want to take up our time. But maybe for daily Bible reading, you can read the book of 1 Kings chapter 10 and look at the wealth that God gave to Solomon. As far as the nation of Israel, Solomon was wealthier than anybody, okay? Who was it that came to see his wealth and his wisdom? Who was it? Anybody remember? The Queen of Sheba. And what was her response when she had conversed with Solomon? What was her response? The half has not been told, okay? So God gave Solomon wisdom, and God gave Solomon also a great amount of wealth. But as wise as Solomon was, okay, Solomon sometimes, particularly in the latter part of his life, didn't use his wisdom the way that God intended for him to do. What was one of the main things that he wasn't very wise in? Just briefly, what was that? What did he do? He married foreign wives, which was taboo for the nation of Israel, okay? He had how many wives and how many concubines? 300. He had 1,000 women in his home, okay? So the Bible says later on in his life that who took his heart away from God? The women did. His wives did. And he would set up these idols and these places of sacrifice, and they stole his heart away from God. So even though he was given great wisdom, he didn't use his wisdom the way he should. All right, there's three things I want to look at as we turn back to the book of Ecclesiastes. Turn back, and we're going to do some reading here. There's three keys to this particular book. The key thought, and you might want to write this down or memorize it or whatever you want to do. The key thought in the book of Ecclesiastes is life apart from God is void of meaning and purpose and full of disappointment. Now that key, as far as the thought, needs to be remembered throughout the entire study that we're going to go through from chapters 1 through verse 12. The key thought is that life apart from God is void of meaning and purpose, and it is full of disappointments. Okay? Now, who believes that? Do we really believe that? That without God, life is full of disappointments and it's really void of meaning. Now, what we're talking about here is we're not talking about giving God 50% of our existence, 50% of our life. What we're talking about in the book of Ecclesiastes is giving God our all. In Matthew 6, verse 33, God says, "Seek ye first the kingdom of God." That means above everything and anything. So when an individual, we as Christians, give God 100%, and there's not anything that we're willing to take back that we give to Him, then life is truly full of meaning. But without that commitment, Solomon says, life is void of meaning. Okay? And it's a waste of time if God's not involved in life. All right, the key word in the book of Ecclesiastes, anybody want to take a thought? What is that? What's the key word? Vanity, okay? The word vanity is used some 39 times, and what does vanity mean? Okay, it's an illusion. Anybody else? Pointless, worthless, useless, okay? That word is used 37 times. The key concept in the book of Ecclesiastes is the word, anybody want to, it's used like 28 times in the book, under the sun. Anybody want to take a shot at what that means? Under the sun? Okay, on this earth, or life apart from who? God, okay? So vanity means useless, and when you see the term under the sun, and you'll see it, like I said, about 28 times in the book, that term simply means life apart from God, all right? The key verse, There's two key verses in my estimation of the book of Ecclesiastes. The first key verse is found in verse 3. Somebody read it. Ecclesiastes 1, verse 3. So go ahead, Sister Ruth. Okay. So this is the key verse in the very beginning of the book of Ecclesiastes. Solomon asks the question, what profit hath a man from all his labor in which he toils under the sun? Now, here's what Solomon's going to do. You might want to call this a journey. You might want to call it a quest, whatever you want to do. But beginning in chapter 1 and verse 3, Solomon begins a journey. And what he's going to do is he's going to try to find happiness in life apart from God, in essence. And what he's going to do from chapter 1, verse 3, he's going to go through his entire life and he's going to come to a conclusion in Ecclesiastes chapter 12 and verse 13. And that's his conclusion through his whole quest of life. Okay? And we'll get to that later on. Anybody knows what Ecclesiastes 12, 13 says? Okay. This is the conclusion of the matter. Now, that's important. This is the conclusion of the matter. He has a beginning in Ecclesiastes 1, verse 3, and he has a conclusion in Ecclesiastes 12 and verse 13. He comes to that conclusion at the end of the book. But there's a lot of stuff that goes on in between chapters 1 and chapter 12, okay? All right, what I'm going to do is we're going to read, we can, you know, take our turn as far as who wants to read and who doesn't. Somebody start in verse 4 and read verse 4 by itself, just verse 4. Read loud, if you would. So what's he saying? One generation comes, another generation goes, but the earth abides forever. What does that mean? Okay. Things do what? Okay. Things change. Things continually change. People change. Countries change. Structures change. Everything in life is continually changing. And that's exactly what Solomon is saying in this particular verse. But he says in verse number 4, but the earth abides forever. Now that word forever is somewhat misleading. Typically when we see the word forever, we want to think that, you know, that means in eternity, through eternity. But the word forever doesn't mean it. It means till a particular fullness of time in this particular verse. In Jonah chapter 2 and verse 9, Jonah says that he was in the belly of the whale forever, okay? That means for a particular period of time. So Solomon here is not saying that the world's going to live forever or be here forever. He says there is just a particular time. How do I know the world's not going to be here forever? Anybody know a verse that says that? Anybody listen to Dustin Sunday? Okay. 2 Peter chapter 3 says that the earth and the works that are therein shall be burned up. I never really thought about this particular verse, as far as one generation passing away, another comes. Did you know, and it's kind of a morbid thought, but did you know that one day somebody will be living in your house? Why? Because you ain't going to be here. Okay? Somebody will soon be living in your house because you won't be here. That's the way life is. One person takes another's place. I remember, and when you're in your 20s and 30s, it doesn't affect you much, but it does when you're in your 60s. I remember years and years and years ago, my mom was doing what I'm doing now. You understand what I'm saying? And now I've taken my mom's place. My mom's in her middle 80s. And there's going to come a time, if the Lord lets me live, that I'm going to take her place in 80s, and my kids are going to take my place in their 60s. You see what Solomon is saying here? Life is always changing. One takes the place of another, okay? And some people say, well, that's kind of sad to think about that. But if you look at it from the materialistic standpoint, if I just look at it like, hey, you know, if this world's all there is to it, then that is depressing, isn't it? But if I look at it from a Christian perspective, as God would have me to look at, it's not depressing at all. Why? Why isn't it depressing? You're one step closer to being with God, okay? So in that sense, it's not depressing, okay? I remember when we first came to Edgewood in 1974, Sister Doris was there, Susan was there, and I was 19 years old, and that's been a few years ago, 40-something years ago. And I remember a lot of people at Edgewood that aren't there anymore, and I think about those people, okay? But now we have taken their place, and here's a question that we need to seriously ponder. What's going to happen when Michael and Max are gone? Who's going to take their place? What men in this congregation are going to step up? Because Michael and Mac ain't going to live forever. That's a fact. Who's going to be the preacher when Dustin's gone? Okay. I mean, we hope he stays here, but who knows how long he's going to live. I mean, you just don't know. Somebody has got to take the place of other people. That's the way life is, and that's what Solomon is saying, particularly in verse number 4. Okay. Verse 5 and 6, somebody. Anybody?
Also the sun rises and the sun sets. Hasten to its place, rise and bear it. Blowing toward the south, turning toward the north, the wind continues swirling along. And on its circular course, the wind returns.
What's it saying? What's Solomon saying? Okay. Life, if you look at verses 5 and verse 6, life's somewhat boring, isn't it? If you look, because the sun comes up, you have daylight, the sun goes down, okay? And life continues that way, okay? So if you look at verse 5 and 6, you could simply say, well, hey, life is somewhat boring because things just continue the way they are. All right, verse 7 and 8. Jeremy, you're pretty loud. Go ahead and keep reading.
All the rivers flow into the sea, yet the sea is not full. To the place where the rivers flow, there they flow again. All things are wearisome. Man is not able to tell it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor is the ear filled with hearing.
Okay. All the rivers run into the sea, yet the sea is not full. Is that a new thought? Was it new to Solomon? Did you know that concept of evaporation wasn't found until the 17th century? Evaporation, how the rivers roll into the sea, yet the sea's not full. That wasn't discovered until the 17th century. How did Solomon know that? How did he know that? God told it. God told it. Okay? So it's not a new thought. You know, we discovered it, or they discovered it in the 17th century. But actually, God established it, and Solomon knew it 2,900 years ago. Okay? Solomon realized, as things continue as they are, that mankind will soon join the common cycle, okay? And again, this sounds a little bit depressing. But what is the common cycle that mankind follows? What's that common cycle? Death. We all gonna die unless the Lord comes back, okay? So we all follow that common cycle. And the only thing that helps us remember particular things The only immortality that we have in our lives is memory. And you understand what I'm saying? The only immortality that we may have is memory. I hope I ain't confused, but let me tell you, let me help you understand what I'm saying. Who remembers what happened in 1593? Anybody? I have no idea. Anybody know what happened on this day in 1793? Who knows? The point Solomon is saying is the things that we know now will soon be forgotten. Do you think in 200 years or 100 years from today, my great-great-great-grandchildren are going to sit around and talk about Pawpaw? No. Why? They won't remember. That's the way, the only thing they're going to remember is memory, the things that parents tell, and that don't last forever, okay? So that's the concept that Solomon's trying to help us understand in these particular verses. Verse 8, he says, "The eye's not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing." What does he mean by that? What does he mean? The eye's not satisfied with hearing or seeing, and the ear's not satisfied with hearing. What does he mean?
It's like it's never enough.
Okay. Anybody in here ever bought a new car? Raise your hand. How long did the new last? Till the first payment. Well, true. Now, I'm going to tell you about my wife. She's sitting here, and she'll, you know, I'm not saying this in any way. She's a great woman. But, you know, we bought new cars, and, you know, oh, you know, I'm going to keep this one clean, and, you know, I'm going to wash it, and, you know, then that lasts about 2 months, you know. Then who ends up washing it? I do. I think we've had a new car for 3 years, and she's washed it, I think, one time. Two, excuse me. The point being is that we have to keep fulfilling the things that we want to have to be happy. You understand what I'm saying? That's what Solomon is saying in the book of Ecclesiastes. The eye's not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear happy with just hearing, okay? If all I'm doing is existing in this life, and this life is all there is to it, then something new has to be created ever so often to keep me happy. Isn't that what Solomon's saying? Whether it's a new car, it's a new house, it's a new job, or whatever it may be. And I think that's kind of gives us a kind of sense of what really makes us happy. Do I have to have something new all the time to keep me happy? If I do, maybe I need to think about what really makes me happy in life. New car, new house, new job. So Solomon says, if a life is filled with God, we don't necessarily need all these things all the time, and they don't create happiness. Okay? Verse number 9. Time's running short. 9 and 10, Jeremy. Please, sir. All right. What does he say? You have to read it real careful. That which has been is what will be. That which is done is what will be done. And there is nothing new under the sun. And in other words, I look at Harrison. And when I studied for this lesson, I thought about Harrison. And Harrison, I've seen his haircut. You know, it comes down and it goes right around the front of the eyes. And am I right? Now, I don't know if he's changed it or not. I hadn't really looked at him lately. But it comes down. Did you know that? And Harrison probably thinks, man, that looks good. And he's a nice looking dude. But he didn't think of that. I had that when I was his age. I had that hairstyle when I was his age. John, did you have that hairstyle? No. The thing about John, his is always in style, right, John? But the point is are things really new, or do things really just rotate? Things just rotate out, okay? What was new 30 years ago, and it really wasn't new, is new today, okay? And it seems to indicate that there's really nothing new. That's what Solomon's trying to say. It's all been rotated out. But he's simply saying in verse number 10, is there anything of which it may be said, see, it is new? And the answer to that is no, okay? But what hasn't changed? God hasn't. And what else hasn't changed? Sin. Sin hasn't changed, okay? Things in life may change and may rotate out, but sin has stayed the same since man's fall in Genesis chapter 3. And not only has sin not changed, but the remedy for sin hasn't changed, okay? As well as it's new, it's not new. Now, I know that, don't misunderstand what I'm saying. And I agree in part, but I don't agree in part. Have you ever heard people say the kids these days has got it tougher than when I was growing up? You ever heard that? Y'all ain't never heard that? Kids these days, temptation, I guess is what I'm saying. Temptations are greater today than they were when I was growing up. Is that true? Sin. Sin hasn't ever changed. Now, there may be different forms of sin, you know, that, you know, maybe Robert didn't face when he was, you know, our age. But sin is still sin, okay? And the Bible says there's three avenues of sin. What are they? Okay, those will always be. As long as man exists, those three avenues of sin will always be. Okay. Now, they may come in different forms and different areas, but they will always be the same. Verse 11.
There is no remembrance of earlier things, also of the later things which will occur. There will be for them no remembrance among those who will come later still.
Okay. There is no remembrance of former things. And this is something I think that we all can learn. Man must relearn the same lessons of former generations. Is that right? Yes. Man must relearn the same things that former generations have learned. All right? Each generation thinks it's wiser than the generation before. But that's not true, okay? Because the things that this generation's doing now are the same thing that my generation was doing when I was their age, right? Maybe difference in some sense, but it's still the same, okay? And the results of that is sin. We got to hurry. Verse 12 through 14. The first part of verse 13, he says, I set my heart to seek and search out by wisdom concerning all that's done under the sun. What a mind-boggling task that is. Can you actually search out with man's finite wisdom all the things that are done under the sun? What good is education? And I'm not against education. What does education do? Okay, it gives us facts. It makes us smart, okay, particularly in the areas of medicine and science and all these particular things. But when we begin to study these particular things like science, what do we learn? Or medicine, what do we learn? God's in control. But the more we learn, the more we realize how dumb we are. Is that, could that be a, because there's always something new to learn. When we begin to learn new things, we open up other areas that we never knew would exist or have existed, okay? I remember when Eric got hurt, and this was 17 years ago. And when he got hurt, we talked to his neurosurgeon, and the neurosurgeon told me and Peggy, he said, you know what? He said, we know less or about as much as third world countries do as far as the brain goes. Man has no concept of the hidden treasures and the hidden things that God knows and will never know. Okay? So Solomon was somewhat depressed with all of his wisdom and all of his learning and all of his education, the things he knew. He realized the more he knew, the dumber he was. The more you know, the dumber you realize you are, you know, unless you're, you know, people who think they do know everything. And they're usually about 16, 15, 16 most of the time. Verse number 15, let's hit it. We've got about 5 minutes left. Okay. What is crooked can't be made straight, and what's lacking can't be numbered, is what the New King James says. There are some things, what do you think he means here? What is crooked can't be made straight in the context of verse number 14. What's crooked can't be made straight. Are there some things that are crooked that can be made straight? Anybody? Haley's got braces. Anna's got, you know, there are some things that are crooked that can be made straight. But are there things that are crooked that can't be made straight? You understand what Solomon is saying here? He's simply asking the question or making the statement, there are some things that can't be fixed. There's some things in this world that man will never fix in his wisdom. Okay, no matter how hard he tries, okay? Because once we cure one thing, what else happens? Something else comes up. Once this problem is solved, then out of that problem comes another problem, okay? So Solomon is simply saying, what is crooked cannot be made straight. It's always you're always going to find something that's going to be more difficult to fix than the one you just fixed, okay? And that's the continual process of life. And an individual who puts all their eggs in this life, and that remember what we talked about, vanity, a person who puts all their eggs in this earth basket, man, life's depressing. Because nothing will ever be right as long as our eggs are in this earthly basket. But if we put our trust and our faith in God, folks, it doesn't matter if things are good in this life or they're not. Isn't that what Solomon's saying? It doesn't matter whether we're sick or we're healthy or we're rich or we're poor. That's what Paul says in the book of Philippians. I know how to be abased. I know how to abound. I know how to be hungry. I know how to be full. But his happiness in life didn't depend on the things that this life offers, okay? There's some folks in this audience who are out of a job. That's difficult. There are people in this in our congregation who are struggling financially. That's difficult. But is the world going to come to an end because of those things that are happening? Is it? What does God say in Matthew 6? Seek ye first, and all these things. You will not be hungry. But if I put my eggs in this basket, life's just flat out miserable, okay? And that's exactly what Solomon is trying to get us to understand. That's what Jesus says in Matthew chapter 6 and verse number 19 through 21. All right? This is just basically the beginning of the book. All right? We're going to get into some other things that are going to be, that's going to make us think. Okay? Not that we don't. But it's going to help us understand that the things in this life aren't really important. Okay? And we're going to challenge ourselves as we begin this journey. We're just on chapter 1. We got 11 more to go. And there's going to be some things that's going to, I never thought about this. You know, I need to start thinking about this in this way, okay? So we'll get to those things as we continue our journey. If you'd like to read chapter 2, that's what we'll be on next week. Read chapter 2, and we'll be discussing that next week. All right? Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Augusta Road Church of Christ. Located in Greenville, South Carolina, the Augusta Road congregation worships God in spirit and in truth in a friendly and loving environment. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter by searching for Augusta Road COC. And if you're ever in Greenville, South Carolina, we would love for you to come by for a visit.